You're listening to the Hammersley Brothers e-commerce podcast. We're offering anybody who listens to this podcast a free e-commerce scale session with either one of us or one of our team members. In these e-commerce scale sessions, we look at five things. Firstly, what's possible. We look at what's achievable in the next 90 days and then the next 12 months. Secondly, we look at the situation. We look at how you're attracting, converting, and delivering what you're working on now. Thirdly, we look at your number one obstacle and what we need to uncover in order to work out what's holding the business back. Then number four, we map out a three-step action plan for help you to sell more products, simplify your e-commerce business, and make satisfying progress. That's what the plan is all about, achieving these things even faster than you currently are. And then five, most importantly, you'll leave the scaling session feeling clear, confident, and excited about taking your e-commerce business to the next level and doing it more quickly. So book your scaling session today by heading over to ecommercecall.com and booking your session with us today. We guarantee this call will be the most important call you make all year. Hello and welcome to the Hammersley Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, Ian and I are looking back at 2020 to find the biggest learnings from 2020 and also looking forward to the 2021 and the biggest opportunities for this year. So let's get started. Hi Ian, how are you?
Hey Mark, good to hear you. Very well. How are you? Happy New Year.
Welcome to 2021.
Yeah, big year.
I know.
High expectations.
We enter 2021. I am in New Zealand and everything seems fairly normal. And you're in the UK and you're locked down, aren't you? And how long are you locked down for?
Until March now. So yeah, this is major lockdown number two after the first one. And obviously the first lockdown was very interesting for e-commerce, wasn't it? What initially happened.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, we kind of went into it.
The first lockdown, everything was up in the air, and then it became, and we didn't know whether or not couriers were going to carry on, but it became very apparent very quickly that e-commerce was going to go through explosive growth, and it did.
Mm-hmm. And in certain things.
Well, in certain things, it initially exploded, and that was anything really in and around the home. So any products you were buying that was for your house that you could consume in your house or your garden, it was great weather as well. They just did incredibly well, like home gym equipment and any DIY type products, home improvements, and anything from a fashion perspective, any sort of sleepwear, homeware, you know, slippers and dressing gowns and things like that. And they initially did really, really well. And then, and I mean like treble, quadruple stuff.
And then some of our customers had to take off their ads of basket buttons for a bit, didn't they? Couldn't keep up.
I know, unbelievable. And then, but then as you moved further into the lockdown and the shops started to shut, you even got an explosion of growth in products that you wouldn't typically think would go well in a lockdown. So even outerwear like suits and jackets and formal shirts, they did well because the shops were shut. So there was less people who wanted to buy formal shirts because no one could go out, but there were less places to buy. So everybody went online. So even those guys got really good growth. So it was very interesting, generally, the trend that was happening.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do this one and this podcast is I wanted to kind of go over the biggest things we learned in 2020 and then talk about the biggest opportunities for 2021. So obviously, let's start with 2020. And I'll start with one of my big learnings, which is akin to what you talked about on the Chloe Thomas podcast, which was about finding out the ROAS. So like the return on advertised spend. So we talk about that a lot on the podcast. So if you've got, paid advertising and you spend £10 and you get £50 back, your return on investment is, gross times five, which would be a ROAS of 500%. And just from running some of our own brands and some customer brands last year, was the importance of knowing that number intimately is
so important to work out whether or not you can grow and at what point, because as soon as you get an opportunity to grow, you need to understand whether you're going to be a busy fool. Like, it's all very well to sell, you know, £100,000 worth of stuff, but if you've not made any margin and you're not made any money, all you've done is you've given yourself work of sending out products and someone else is making the money. So it's so important to understand those fundamental, like the margins of your business. I'm actually going to record a new module for the course, which actually breaks this down into a much simpler way, just to kind of sense check this, because until you actually sit down with those numbers and actually work out the RAS properly, you don't really get the idea of what you need to hit. And we've got this conversation with some of our business partners at the moment, with some of the brands we're launching, and you know, they're saying, oh, we could probably hit a RAS of 500% and make money. And I'm like, I'm putting it into the spreadsheet, I'm going, well, actually, we actually lose 1% at that level at the current margin. So, you know, it's that business design that is fundamentally important, because if you think about that margin, that little window of gross profit you get is where all your hopes and dreams have to pass through. And if that window's closed, you're not gonna do anything with your business. So that was a huge learning for me. I mean, I knew it, but it was just making sure.
I think 2020 compounded it, really, didn't it? But actually, on the flip side, it's not, you know, you might be in a position where you are spending too much, but actually a lot of businesses we saw this year were not spending enough. Mm. And the ROAS was too high. And they were thinking, oh, no, you know, we need to be careful. You know, we don't want to spend, you know that extra 10 grand or okay, maybe they were spending 10 grand. They didn't want to go past it. They just didn't want to do that. And actually the opportunity and the appetite and the margins were there to push the ROAS much further. Let's say they've been sat on a times 8 ROAS, and they might have said, well, actually, we've looked at the numbers, and actually, based on our lifetime customer value and our margins and, you know, our upselling strategy, we can actually afford to go down to a times 5 ROAS. And that all of a sudden opened up a huge amount of traffic that was now that was profitable, that they could let through the doors and recruit a lot more customers. And that, boy, oh boy, is the fastest way to scale an e-commerce site. Mm. You know, you've hit the nail on the head, the gates.
There. Because as soon as you have, if you've just got a one-off purchase, then obviously that margin calculation, you know, is what it is. But then as soon as if you add into it lifetime customer value and you see that people are buying on average 2.5 times a year or something, then it makes a whole different calculation, and it makes you realize that maybe you recruit just to scratch your back. You don't lose money, you don't make money, because you know you're going to get those other 1.5 purchases during the year, and that's where all your profit is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's understanding that and understanding what game you're getting in, but you don't want to be going into a game where it doesn't work. So it's about knowing what the opportunities are.
You know, from the numbers. It is. We've said this so many times, but I'll say it again because it's probably the most fundamental thing in e-commerce that we've ever learned and talked about. It's how much does it cost us to recruit a customer, and how much is that customer worth to us over a lifetime? That's it. That's e-commerce. And, you know, the game here is to be able to buy traffic profitably. And, you know, you could go out tomorrow, you could click your fingers, and you could get another 100,000 people to your website tomorrow. Everybody could, as long as the market's there, which in most cases it is. But it wouldn't be profitable because, you could only afford to buy with the website as it is at the moment. Let's say, you know, conversion rate was, you know, 2.1%, add to basket, you know, 7%, basket to order. You know, let's say it's, I don't know, 65%, whatever. That gives you a conversion rate of, you know, 2% and a bit. So based on that and your average order value that you've got, say it's £50, it means that you can only spend up to £7,000 a month and still have a ROAS that works for you in a business that you make, that makes sense. But if you improve the conversion rate or the average order value or the lifetime customer value, all of a sudden you can increase that budget for your paid advertising. So you can afford to spend £15,000 a month or £20,000 a month and still maintain that profitable ROAS. And that's it. So it's so important to understand it. And we've said this so many times, but 2020 was, you know, even more important because it was, and I said this on the Chloe Thomas podcast, that there were parts of 2020 during lockdown that it was like being in Black Friday every day. You know, it was, so the conversion rate was there. You know, it stood up, didn't it? Yeah. And the opportunity to recruit new customers was very, very real. And actually, a lot of businesses, you know, if they hadn't been looking at their ROAS, they'd have missed out the opportunity. But if they've factored their business, there should be no limit on the budget for your paid advertising. You know, the limit should be on the ROAS. You know, it really should.
Yeah. I mean, I think that brings us to the second point, which you did allude to a little bit before, which was the learnings for 2020, which was things that never were bought online before were now bought on mass. So, like, examples of that would be like people making craft chocolates, you know, pretty much any food, craft beers, all those kind of things that, you know, people had got these businesses, they'd been selling maybe locally a little bit here and there, and then suddenly, you know, they had a website or maybe thought about it, and then suddenly just started getting orders from nowhere, because people were stuck in their houses and everybody wants to eat. So, yeah. You know, those companies have suddenly have online businesses that they didn't have before. And they're obviously sitting there wondering, well, what's going to happen in 2021? What's going to happen next? And I think, you know, they're going into that with huge, what we call house files. They're the customer email lists. And I think that people are going to be buying those things online for a much longer period, because once behavior has changed, and it's changed for a decent period of time, which it will have by the time we're out of this, those habits will be in place. So if you've got your favorite craft beer and you're on a subscription and you get it sent every month, you'll probably keep going with that because that's what you do now, and that's how it is, and that'll become part of your life. So a lot of these subscription businesses will probably continue to do very well into the future. What will probably change will be the recruitment of them. They probably won't recruit as strongly as you did during the lockdowns, but you've got a business and it's got legs, and it will continue to drive as long as you make the right decisions.
Yeah. I mean that's almost coming into 2021, isn't it? I mean, in terms of actually what you do now, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's not cover it until. Don't give the secrets away.
Let's wait. No. Let's wait.
Yeah.
Spilled suspense.
Yes, exactly. So yeah. The last one for 2020 that I've got here that was a big learning was supply chain. So those customers and ourselves included, when we had a direct relationship with the factory, or at least very close relationship with the factory, we did a lot better than if we were like, you know, third in the line, you know, like we were, you know, there was a supplier and then a supplier, well, and then there was a factory.
There was a shortage
like
of stock, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And, you know, you to not have control of your supply chain, you know, is obviously a risk. And, you know, there were situations where a lot of our clients this year had sold so much, they just had no stock. They had nothing left. Mm. And the ones that were down the pecking order obviously suffered the most. I mean, I know there were a couple of our clients predicted what was going to happen and went and bought very heavily and very aggressively, and bought the stock so the other competitors couldn't buy it. And that was one of their, and on the back of that, you know, trebled their November. I mean, it was, you know.
Yeah, because they were the only people that had the stock. They were the only people that had the stock. They were the only people that could have the clout to do that. And, you know, if you were a drop shipper in that industry, I won't mention the industry, then you're just going to be, you have to shut your business, because they were literally, A, not taking any more drop shippers on, B, the drop shippers they got, they couldn't give stock to, because, I mean, this big customer had gone into the warehouse and said, okay, you're still going to drop ship it for me, but I'm going to buy all that stock. So I'm going to sell it and you're just going to hold it for me. Mm. But it was, you know, it was those people who controlled their supply chains and had good relationships with them, and you know the factories wanted to make sure that those customers were looked after. They were the ones that did well, and so therefore, you know, spending time you know, looking after your supply chain is it pays dividends. And you know, if you, you know, like say, for example, some of the businesses we've run, like rather than choosing maybe three suppliers to try and get the best price of, you know, we might, if for like a like 2% increase in margin, you know, it was better for us to kind of go say, no, we're going to buy everything from you. We're going to look after you. You know what I mean? We look after them as almost like they're our client as well, so that they treat us well. And that was a big learning, rather than just kind of going, right, oh, I'm going to deal with you this month because you're giving us crap prices. You know, it was more of about how can we secure the relationship because we value what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, some businesses got into a lot of mess by overselling this year. You know, massive demand, hadn't got the stock control system sorted out and started overselling and had huge customer service issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's the case with a lot of e-commerce businesses where they said, yeah, it looks great. We've done phenomenally well. But oh boy, have we got a tough time now trying to actually deal with the demand. You know, it's full on.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of customers and that don't have direct stock feeds into the factories. And, you know, as soon as they start selling a lot, that becomes a big issue because then they suddenly go, oh, I've sold that. Go and have a look at it. Oh, they haven't got any. They had some on Tuesday, but now it's sold out. So, you know, that just causes a lot of headaches that are unnecessary, really.
Yeah.
So it's just about getting all that sorted out. So let's look forward to 2021 and let's look at the biggest opportunities that are available to us. New year, new opportunities. So the first one I've got here is 2021 is, you know, building a community around your e-commerce business is huge. Now we saw some people do it last year with great success, and you know it's going to continue to be one of the big differentiators moving forward. And you know, if you think about it, the reason for that is we're all stuck in our houses and we want community more than ever. We've got used to being part of online communities, and we don't just want to buy from brands that you know, as a product. A lot of the time we're going to buy from a brand that has something else. Like yesterday I was doing a screen capture video for someone selling wool and like yarn, and obviously, you know, if she goes and just sells on Google Shopping and she's selling wool from other people, then it's just going to be a race to the bottom, isn't it? It's going to be like, oh, who can sell this wool for the cheapest? But if she builds a community around that business, she has a Facebook group and she drives people into the Facebook group and she says, this is what we're knitting this month and this is what people have done and have photos, people are going to want to be part of that and they want to be part of the business and they're going to be much more engaged with it and they're going to go buy wool from her because they want to be part of the group and do what the group's doing at the same time, especially as if she starts putting bundles together where it's like, oh, it's this wool, and this wool. And then if they have to go and try and do that from other people, they've got to go and buy it from those three different places. So building a community, especially for a product that's got a higher average order value, say you're selling something for over £1,000, like someone I'm working with at the moment, they sell a hydroponic vegetable growing pod that goes either inside your house or outside your house. So it's very popular for Singapore and places like that because it's, you know, it's allowing people to grow vegetables inside their houses without any weeding or anything like that, and it pretty much does everything for you. So but of course, you know, something like that, it's a big purchase. So building a community and a group around that means that you can have existing customers showing people what they're achieving with their pods and bring people into the group, and it becomes this like kind of like living dynamic testimonial group, so people go, oh, I want to do that as well. So
do you know what's cool about a community? And really, when we say a community, we're really talking about the social media and Instagram and Facebook and those sort of places, really.
But I think a little bit more in the fact they're actually part of a group. So like, you know, like Instagram is fair enough and you've got followers on Instagram and you've got that kind of stuff. But actually putting someone into a specific group where it's like the walls are defined and you're either in a Facebook group, a Slack group, or, you know, the other, you know, even a membership forum or something like that. But something specific where they feel part of, you know, there's like those people outside aren't part of the group, and I've done something to actually say, yes, I am part of this.
I mean, Twitter is an example of this, isn't it? But there's loads, all these things. But the great thing about the a community is that it bypasses the traditional paid media as well. Mm-hmm. So that, if you think about the alternative, if this lady had not got community around her wool that you were talking about before, she would have to go and advertise this on Google Shopping and Google Text Ads. And of course, that's going to cost her a lot of money. And also, she's going to be then compared instantly against everybody else. Whereas if she's built a community around it, she's got this captive audience who trust her, the credibility and trust is there, and the sale is almost done before people even get to the website, it's really powerful. And if you think about it, it's kind of like going back to what it was before the internet existed with all these specialist magazines. I mean, obviously they still exist, but, I remember businesses that we know who've transformed from advertising in these very niche little publications like Boat Owners Monthly or Boat Owners Weekly. And they used to put ads in
Boat Owners Weekly. That sounds
exciting. Yeah. Yeah, and they used to sponsor the competitions in the magazines, and they'd do the Q&As, and they'd be the expert guests, and they'd take ads out, and they basically had the credibility and authority through that, and that's really the same. Those people now, if they were starting up now, they would be doing this through all of the social media channels, wouldn't they, and creating this community around it, and all great content and authority led, and all that sort of stuff that we all talk about. And I think that's
even take it back further. Like, think of a local bar in a or a pub in a village. So like they live or die by creating a community around their customers. You know, they're friendly. Everybody goes there. They know they're going to see people there. You go there to be part of a community, to be part of something. And those are the best. Those are the best businesses. And there's one in St. Helier's down here that does that. And people, it was a community. So if you can do that for any business, if you think about even like a local grocer's, you go to the grocer's because you're going to go and see Bob, and I might bump into so and so. And it's like that community of things that we all kind of crave that we don't get. And so building a community around the business actually makes a big difference to whether people shop there, and it becomes less about price, and it becomes more about being part of something, especially if the business has got a bigger mission. A wool business, she's not trying to sell wool, but she's trying to get people to knit more and be more relaxed.
It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to get the job to be done across, isn't it? The job isn't to buy some wool, it's to make some amazing creation, like a lovely rug that you can give to your family at Christmas, and they're all gonna, it's all gonna be great. It's that sort of thing, isn't it? And it adds credibility and trust. But it's a big thing to say that, go create community. You have to, we'll probably do a podcast around how to do it at some point.
It is big. And it's and when I sat there before I created some of the communities that I've created, the fear is that what if no one joins? What if one person joins? But I think...
You've got to keep going because you will get one person join. But then you go, oh, God, I've only got, one person, but you have to keep going, and you get to this critical mass.
Yeah. And you've just got to look after the people the early founders. You've just got to really look after them, because at the end of the day, if you get those 10, 20 people at the beginning and you look after them, they'll share the message, and that's just how it works. But it just feels, you can be doing it sometimes. You can be 6 months in and you think, well, we're going. And then it just kind of hits a tipping point. I mean, look at this podcast. When we first started doing it, we're like, oh, we're doing a podcast like everybody else.
And we just knew that dad who listened. That was it.
Exactly. And we, well,
he
we
used
knew
to
that.
Criticize us, say Mark's better than you, Ian. That's what he said.
It's true. But the thing is, you don't get, until you have a decent number of episodes and people come, they just go, oh, there's only got 3 episodes. They're probably just having a go at it. People aren't going to stay and watch it. But when they come and they see there's almost 100 episodes, they go, oh, this is an established podcast. People are looking at it. And then obviously they can see the downloads and stuff like that. But it's just, it's hitting those tipping points in those communities. Mm. And we've got to put the work in. But the reason you put the work in is because those assets are huge for a business. And if they are like the other bank accounts, aren't they? Like you've got the bank account is the, actually a real bank, the money in the bank. And then you've got the bank account is the house file list, the amount of people on that. That's like another bank account you can go and draw money from.
Well, you've warmed them up.
And the community is another bank account.
Yeah, you've warmed them up. You've got, you know, one of the hardest things to get online is trust and credibility. And it gives you instant trust and credibility, not just for the people that are in the community, but the people who come to the site who can see the community and go, wow, I want to be part of this. Look at all these people like me that have benefited from this website selling wool. Oh, my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be here. That's the feeling. So moving on to probably the biggest thing to understand going into 2021. And unless you've got anything to add, I think I'm going to talk to you about what I've noticed. And it goes, is there anything else you want to add, Mark?
Well, I don't know. The second point I've got for 2021 is converting the huge house file that a lot of people are now sitting on.
That's what I'm going to talk about. That's what I'm talking about now.
I wasn't sure where you were going. Thought you might be going.
Well, you just have to let me go. And, you know, you can see me back. Anyway, you're absolutely right. It was the huge house files. So a house file is essentially how many people are on your customer database. And a lot of businesses that we've seen over the last 10-20 years, some of them, I often say at the start, they'll grow this business as quickly as they grow their house file. And that basically means that you want to recruit as many customers as you can, and then you've got a big email database, and you've got this herd, you've got this big group of people that like you, and then it becomes really profitable because you really converting them via either email or a direct type. So obviously, when you recruited them in the first place, traditionally it's a paid advertising spend, which of course costs quite a lot of money. So, you know, £100 average order value, it's going to cost you at least 25 quid, you know, if you're a typical margin, typical average order value type business. So that's cost you a lot of money. So if they come back and buy again via email, it's practically free in terms of the cost per acquisition because you've already got them on your database. So what's great about 2020 was that a lot of customers recruited masses of customers that they wouldn't normally have recruited because there was so much appetite. Now they're sat on these big house files and they're going to go, well, what do I do with it? And how do I get them to buy again? Mm-hmm. And if you think about some of the things that we would talk to e-commerce businesses when they're a little bit bigger, we would start to get into segmentation and RFM and recency frequency modeling and things like that. And but when you've got a small customer database of, say, I don't know, 10,000, it isn't worth the time, unless your average order values are huge. But if you're a typical business, average order value, you know, £50 to £100, it isn't really worth the time to go in and start to do loads of segmentation around your database and really understand it. But as you might have 50,000 people on your customer database, and that's where you can really go in to understand who these customers are, what they bought initially, what they want to buy a second time, and really, it should be the profitable era. You know, we're not going to get this continued growth at the same level, you know, going into 2021. So it's about monetizing this list. And it really probably has catapulted your business. 2020 probably, you know, it was like 3 years in one in terms of the natural growth that you would get. It kind of, I mean, some businesses, it was even more than that. So really, it's about how you get the customers on your house file to buy again. Because if they don't buy again, it was meaningless. You know, there's no point. Now, the biggest thing that influences repeat business or lifetime increasing the lifetime customer value, unfortunately, is down to the product you sell. You know, if you're selling something like contact lenses, you're naturally going to have a much higher repeat business than if you're selling a sofa, you know, naturally. So you have to factor that in. But really, you know, if you were selling a sofa, you might be thinking about other products you could add to your range to actually increase the lifetime customer value. So the throws and the soft furnishing, the other things. But generally speaking, you know, the biggest things that I've seen increase lifetime customer value or repeat business is, you know, post-purchase emailing straight away. So they're more likely to buy straight away in the first 30 days if they don't buy within the first 30 days, they're less likely to buy, you know, in the next 11 months. So hit them when they're hot with email. Mm. Look at loyalty point systems, but not a point. So you actually need to communicate the cash. So think about what you can give them to come back. And think about the free delivery. So what I'm essentially saying is, if it costs you £25 to convert a customer initially, you might find that if you threw, you know, £10 at them on the second purchase through free delivery or a discount, some discount cash off, it might be much, much cheaper for you, rather than having to go out and recruit a new customer and pay £25. And obviously it normally is significantly more efficient to get a customer to buy twice rather than having to recruit a whole new customer again. So that's the big thing now, is looking at the lifetime customer value and really getting into that.
Can I just add something to that? Because what you were talking about was good. And there's a human psychological thing, which is fear of loss. We're a lot more bothered about losing £5 than actually gaining £5. It's just built into human psyche. If you've got something and it's taken away from you, it triggers you a lot more. So if you can give a customer like what looks like to be a physical £5 voucher, and then you say this will run out at the end of the month or in 30 days, and then you email them like three days before that runs out and say this is about to run out, this coupon's about to expire specifically for them, you're going to trigger that fear of loss. And having a £5 voucher or $5 voucher is as powerful as actually them getting maybe 20 quid, because it's just the way the mind works. I don't know why we're geared that way, but
it's, you know, you can give people discount off, but it's actually, you're right, you know, having even a lower monetary value as an actual voucher, cash voucher, that you're going to lose, and it's very powerful, isn't it? But if you know, it's different for every client, every e-commerce business. You know, there's a better hook, but you've really, really got to think about how you can get them to buy again. Because if you don't get your customers to buy again, you're one hit wonders, and you're going to have to pay to recruit your customers all the time. You know, if you want to scale to 10 million, 20 million, 50 million, it's just going to cost you millions of pounds because you're having to pay for every single transaction you get. If you can focus on the lifetime customer value and get the repeat business up, you've game changed it. You know, it's huge. Because what does that do? Going right back to the first thing we said, if you can get the repeat business up from, say, 1.2 times a year to 2.2 times a year, that means you can be more aggressive with your ROAS and your advertising budgets, because you can afford to be, because you know you've got the repeat business coming in. So it massively comes back to that initial point about understanding your return on ad spend.
Yeah. And then the other thing with the email is to kind of understand when a customer becomes a lapsed customer. So, you know, what is the probability that if they haven't bought again by a certain point, maybe the probability that they're not going to buy is like 99%. So it's almost like you can think, well, if they've been on the list and they've not bought again for this period of time, I can probably, you know, statistically say that they are a lost customer. And therefore, at that point, you go, well, if they're a lost customer, I can probably afford a little bit more than I would normally to try and recruit them back, because, you know, I've lost them. There's nothing to lose. I'm going to have to recruit new customers at that point. So, you know, then you can then send them what we used to call our killer offer, which would only be sent to lapsed customers to try and get them back. And, you know, it's just no brainer, isn't it? Because they've gone, you know that they're gone, then you know they're not going to come back and buy because they're lapsed. And therefore, you know, you can give them your best offer, because you they're not going to buy anyway. And the danger is, if you give that killer offer to people who are going to buy anyway, you know, who are, you know, going to come back, then they would have bought anyway, and you didn't have to give away such margin. So it's understanding that lapsed, when a customer is lapsed. So there's all those little there's the basic segmentation stuff that you would do first before you'd even get into, like, you know, is this customer going to buy these types of products, that kind of stuff. So,
and the whole thing about giving them the wow experience, you know, so when they buy something, you know, give them the unexpected and make them feel really excited about it, and they're joining a club, joining a community, all those sort of things. But it's a massive one. You know,
yeah,
it really
it's
is.
It's going to be a good unboxing experience. People love unboxing stuff, and they put those videos on YouTube unboxing. And so, you know, what's your unboxing experience like? Is it something that's a wow moment? Is it something that they would actually share with people on social media? Or is it just a bag where they just open it and they've got it? And it's like, well, okay, you know, that's not very exciting. So, you know, there's little things you can do with the unboxing experience to make it a bit nicer fun, you know, this little mysterious gifts. And, you know, one of the artists we work with, he put little, there was these kind of little figurines that he put in, and then people would then tweet which one they got. And people were just buying new other products just to see which other little figurine they were getting. I mean, it just, these little games that people play, it's amazing what people get into. You're working with human beings who want to be part of something. So that's important. And so the last thing for 2021, which I think is going to be very, very important, and we've seen this shift throughout the year and probably the past couple of years, is that people want to buy from people, and they want to buy to connect. You know, the reason they're going online and the reason they're buying from non-corporate businesses, you know, slightly smaller businesses, and even if you're doing 20 million, you're still a small business really in terms of, you know, global things, is that they want to connect with the people behind the business, and they want to know who they're buying from. So if your product page is your landing page, and that's the first impression of the business, you need to answer that question. So like when I was doing a lot of copywriting, it was always about, the first question was like, what's the voice of this sales letter? Who's speaking? And that was the hugest point, because that was like, well, should I trust this person? If you like met someone on the street, you know, if you're on the street and you pull down your car window and someone tries to sell you something, and you looked at them, you go, well, I'm not going to trust you because you're just some random person that's come up to me. But if the voice is there and it's kind of like, well, I can see they're like me, they've got children like me, they live in a similar place to me, and I trust them, and all, you know, that it's the voice of what's being sold.
I know. And if you look, you look at some of the fastest growing e-commerce businesses in 2020 and probably before that, from nothing, there's a personality there. You know, there's a group of people there, and even big ones. You know, we're not talking about guys who are doing 500,000. We're talking about guys who are doing, you know, 50 million, 100 million. You know, some of the big American e-commerce businesses. You know, there's the founders. And it's their family, and they're hugging and holding hands, and you can feel that. And what does that give? Instant trust and credibility. You know, social proof.
Because they feel like there's someone behind the business that cares. It's not just a warehouse that's just trying to flog things with most money. And you know, I do see this a lot with the very small people. I think they put their websites up and they're very afraid to put themselves into the business. But that's what they need to do. They need
that's
to actually,
it. It's probably the only thing they've got. Well, it's one of the things.
It is. And we've seen people like who do this. And there was a guy selling smoked salmon up in Scotland, and he's put himself into the business, put himself on there. People love it because they want to buy off a local fish whistle. Yeah. They want to know who they are. You know, if you compare that to going into the supermarket and just buying a plastic wrapped piece of smoked salmon from nobody, you don't know anything about the product. You don't know who's made it.
Well, if you think, cares, you know, about it's it. One of, it's go back to the three things that we said that that you can go down when you're trying to scale an e-commerce business. It's brand, it's discounting, it's product that solves a unique problem. You know, and a lot of people don't want to do, you know, or don't have a product that solves a unique problem. A lot of people don't want to go down the discounting route. So it's the brand. And the only way, you know, you're not going to go and spend £1 million on London buses, are you? So what have you got? You've got yourself, and then you become the brand, and you build a personality around that. And that gives the credibility and trust that a brand does. And that's what a brand is, isn't it? So put your face there on your site.
Yeah, and also
right
like when people are going through things in lockdown, you know, we've seen our top brands, some of them are doing 10 million plus. You know, the founders have been emailing the client list and saying, look, you know, this is what we're doing. We hope you're okay. And they've been actually reaching out to people personally. And it's not been a sales email. It's just been basically, this is who we are, and this is what the community's doing, and this is how we can help you, and all that kind of stuff. And it's important to do, because you know, a lot of the time that they're the leaders of their communities, aren't they? So they've got to step
indeed.
Up and do it. Anyway, that's my 3 points for 2020, what we learned, and 3 points for 2021. And hopefully some people have picked some stuff up from us there.
Yes. Good. Indeed.
All right. Thank you. We'll finish it there. And If people listen to this podcast and they haven't bought the book, they can grab the book from book.hammersleybrothers.com if they want to buy it in US dollars. If they want to buy it in UK pounds, they can buy it at www.ecommercebook.co.uk, and you can get started on the journey with us. We also run very popular mentoring groups, which we invite people to. So I think everything's on a waiting list at the moment. But if you just get in touch if you buy the book, you'll get the emails about it when it's open. So look forward to working with you all in
this far. They've paused the podcast. They've gone to the next episode.
Have they?
They're not listening. No one's listening now.
This is the exciting bit, though, when they can understand how to get involved.
I'd have pressed the skip forward 30 seconds or just gone to the next episode.
Maybe you're not a true fan, Ian.
I'll say I'm not dedicated enough.
No. Yeah. Get rid of you. It'll be the Hammersley brother.
You put a comment on the end of this podcast if you're still listening now. No one will.
The Hammersley brother. And then, it's not.
Yeah, that doesn't work as well on your own. No.
All right. Anyway, I'll speak to you next week.
Yeah. All right. Bye.